Coming up on Money Bites by Smart Money People.
If you look at the size of the market that companies like ourselves actually dominate, it's still so small.
Yes, I was wondering if you've, you know, helped customers defrost their cards in the past.
Last question, 5 seconds left. If dogs could talk, what would they tell us?
Oh my God, I love you. Take me for a walk.
Well, defrosting cards isn't really my specialty.
But at least they are making the big guys who were very complacent kind of sit up and really take notice and listen.
Welcome to Money Bites. Here are your hosts, Mike and Nate.
Hello and welcome to Money Bites by Smart Money People. Coming up on today's show, what's next for fintech?
We also have a highly anticipated edition of Skittlemania as Tanya Andreasen attempts to surpass the current Skittlemania leader, me, Nate Harwood. So, let's get that grill heated as it's time to grill the big cheese.
Time to fire up the hot seat as Mike welcomes another guest in to grill the big cheese.
Well, today we're delighted to have Tanya Andreasen, the Editor-in-Chief at Fintech Futures, the definitive knowledge hub for all things fintech. So Tanya, can you start us off? What is fintech all about?
Well, thank you very much for inviting me here. I'm very happy to be here. So fintech itself is not new. So fintech is basically technology to financial services. So it's been around for years and years and years, decades, I would think. You know, Barclays had its ATM, first ATM in the 60s, and that's fintech. It's just never been known as fintech and never been a buzzword. So when I started working in the industry as a young journalist, I worked for a company that focused on banking technology, and it was a very kind of sleepy area, you know, and all we talked about was green screens, you know, black and green sort of old computers and things like that. Suddenly, mobile came to the fore, smartphones, the regulator started looking favorably upon digital banks and digital banking, and here we are, fintech is a big thing.
And one of the things we're really interested in about is, you know, there's so many things you as a journalist can choose to write about. What draws you and what excites you about fintech?
Well, at the moment, and for the last couple of years, I've been really interested by challenger banks because the banking sector in the UK in particular has been so well established and so kind of dormant and also complacent. So, and suddenly all these new banking startups started coming to the fore, offering their services, democratizing finance, and also offering choice to the consumer, which is a great thing.
On challenger banks and digital challenger banks, are you Team Monzo or Team Starling?
Is it okay to say that I'm neither?
Oh, neither. That's controversial.
I'm unbiased.
And what a lot of the new digital challenger banks are doing or thinking about is this marketplace model of banking. It's a really new way, I think, for banks to think about how they kind of cross-sell products and do more with the customers they already have. Do you see that as working? Can we see any signs of success, or do you think that's something that we still need a bit more time to actually prove that that's going to be the future?
It is definitely going to be the future, but it's just taking a bit longer, I think, than quite a lot of people anticipated. And there are many reasons for that, like, for example, customer knowledge about it, also the sort of legacy processes at big banks, for example, that need to be sorted out, and the big banks need to open up and they need to be willing to open up, you know. Lots and lots of little guys vying for attention. So there is lots of stuff going on, but it's definitely coming. There are a couple of good examples. If you look, for example, at ING that launched its smart money app, Yolt. Now that has, I believe, near a million clients or thereabouts. I mean, it's doing pretty well. It's a good example of how to apply open banking and that kind of data sharing in practice. So if you have that app, you can switch utility bills, you can look at various savings products. I believe there are quite a few other bits and pieces you can look at all in one place. Bring all your cards together, very convenient.
You talked about fintech being something that's been around for ages, albeit the name is relatively new. But it seems like the pace has really quickened in the last, I say, 3 to 5 years. Do you see particular areas that are now a bit oversaturated from a fintech perspective? There's too many companies doing things in there. And what do you think the next front frontier is for fintech and kind of new startups trying to do something different.
When the fintech boom sort of started happening, the main focus was on personal finance management apps, so PFM, right? I guess you can say Yolt is one of those. Low-hanging fruit, you know, easy to bring to market, quite quick, does not require too much regulation because you're not providing the service, you know, underlying service, you're just sort of aggregating everything in one place. So I think there has been like a peak of that, and it's a lot of these apps have started falling by the wayside purely because it's pretty difficult to convince, you know, customers to switch or to sign up. You know, there is, we all know, like customers tend to be a bit apathetic, and there's just too much choice as well. Plus, the big incumbents started bringing their stuff, and it's probably, well, maybe might not be as revolutionary, but pretty good as well. So, you know, scalability is an issue. So PFM, I think, kind of is a bit, eh. But then we are having this AI, artificial intelligence boom kind of thing. And there is a lot of stuff in the market, and pretty much every startup has AI written somewhere in their manifesto, in their marketing brochures, you know, and stuff like that. So, because it attracts so much attention and it's easy, I guess, to raise funding if you say that you are AI. You know, whether you're genuinely an AI, that's a very big question, you know. So quite often, if you look under the hood, all it is just a spreadsheet with, you know, a couple of people sitting somewhere offshore, you know, populating it very quickly. Blockchain is another one that kind of peaked and then never delivered purely because it was mainly a solution looking for a problem rather than addressing a specific problem. And now we are in the era of further client personalization. So that means that the services that are provided are not just fast and digital and transparent, but they're very, very personalized to the specific customer. So one institution that might be providing offering services to you might be providing completely different services to me because, for example, I'm a saver and, you know, you're a spender and somebody else just bought a house, so they need, you know, different sort of services. And this is where machine learning, AI, and other sort of digital technologies can really help to deliver.
One of the kind of criticisms of fintech has been that they tend to focus on niche areas that are profitable and they target certain demographics that they're going to make money from, right? Very few people are trying to build a universal bank for everyone all across the UK. Do you think in a few years' time, we're going to get really good service for certain profitable customers and actually maybe the service standards and the product availability is going to drop for less attractive segments?
Well, you can understand why the startups are chasing, you know, low-hanging fruit, right? Because it's difficult to be a startup and make money, so you have to focus on something. It's pretty difficult to be all things to all people. And I don't think there is you know, any startup or challenger bank that says, you know what, we're going to address everything for everyone, because that's just not possible. And like, why would you? Plus, there are specific niche areas in the UK, for example, financial services sector, that desperately needed addressing, like SMEs or freelancers and sole entrepreneurs. You know, they have been really badly, like terribly serviced by the incumbent providers. So you can see why, you know, there was a need. And so you can understand why quite a lot of startups looked at it and said, oh, that's the area we're going to go, you know, into. But in terms of, or for example, I don't know, people who travel and, you know, use cards abroad a lot, you know, look at Revolut and how well it's doing, you know, with its like no FX fees. And I can understand why the companies are focusing on specific areas and the ones where they can see they can make money as well. Going forward, yes, quite a lot of them as they grow will struggle with a sort of customer service and also will struggle with a lot of competition because, you know, everybody's a smart person, right? So we'll see. I think there's definitely going to be quite a lot of these companies either being acquired or merging or going into administration or just falling by the wayside.
That's really interesting. So we talk about, you know, strategies, and all the fintechs have strategies, whether they include AI or not. And some of the strategies are really just to grow as fast as they can and not really be that concerned about profitability. What percentage of startups do you think actually don't set out to make money? They just want to get scale as soon as possible and then try and be acquired, whether that's by another startup or scale up or a bank?
Oh, it's difficult to put the number on that, to be honest, because quite a lot of startups always have a much more appealing manifestos than what's going on in reality, right? Yeah. So nobody's saying, well, actually, you know, I'm only here to make a quick buck and then laugh all the way to the bank. Everybody's going to say, well, we are here long term, we have these grand plans and so on and so forth. But it's true, quite a lot of entrepreneurs, particularly serial entrepreneurs, they start something, you know, they see the opportunity, if they can raise money and then sell it on, they will. And quite a lot of startups are also very dependent on the investors. And it depends who you have as an investor, whether it's a sort of private equity firm or whether it's like family owned or whether it's, I don't know, friends owned or so on and so forth. So they might then be governed and pressured into different strategies to grow, whether to, for example, scale first and then make money, or always think about being profitable or have a long-term plan. So we can look at, for example, guys like Monzo and Starling, right? And Revolut, they are losing a lot of money. Although I think Starling said that they were going to break even soon by the end of the year. I mean, Monzo is losing bucket loads, but they're doing that to gain customers. Customer acquisition and retention is super expensive. I mean, these guys are going to spend $20 million on ad campaigns. I mean, that's a lot of money, right? But you can see their adverts on the buses, on the tube, you know, in the newspapers, on telly, you know, all that sort of stuff doesn't come cheap.
It costs money. Right. Well, that brings us on to the next question. If you had to come up with a list, Tanya's top tips for fintechs, what do you think the most critical elements are for a fintech to succeed in this environment? What do they really need?
Well, define success, right? if you're just trying to raise a lot of money and then sell on, then, you know, do it as fast, I guess, as you can. But if you are here for the long term, or at least if you're here to make an impact and make an impression, then I think it's very important to understand who your customer base is, who you're targeting. So be it a specific niche or a specific segment, understand who else is in the market and what's already being offered. Then kind of develop a more or less clear strategy of where you are now and where you want to be. Because if you're going out there trying to drum up investment, you know, everybody want to know what your plan is, what it is that you're doing. And then, of course, bring good people on board, really strong, knowledgeable specialists in whatever subject it is you need, technology, marketing, sales, business development, what have you. And for that, I guess you do need to be in a big city like London.
London is definitely a hub for fintech. Well, actually, some people say it's the global hub for fintech. Is that something that you believe in, that you see when you look across the world, that London actually, relatively small country here in the UK, is China over there, the USA over there? Are we really the global capital of fintech?
We are. We are very fortunately geographically positioned. And also because we've traditionally been a very well-established financial services hub. You have fantastic skills and expertise, you know, of people concentrated in quite a small, you know, place. So London is one of the key international financial hubs.
And do you think that will remain the case? So if we look forward and let's say 20 years, let's jump a lot's going to happen in 20 years, but do you still think London's going to retain that status as a really important financial hub alongside Shanghai or New York?
I believe so, unless there is some sort of global warming catastrophe and we all sink, or I don't know, Donald Trump nukes, you know, hurricanes or whatever, you know. So I think so, because it's, yes, there are lots of other hubs, say in Europe, that are very strong from the people and sort of setup points of view, but none of them come close at the moment in terms of their size, scope, and capabilities to London. New York is great, 100%, but it is the Americas. It's across the Atlantic, so it's quite, you know, it has its own focus. It's international, but not to the same extent, you would argue, that as London is. And then, of course, you have China, which is indeed has great capacity and lots of manpower and lots of innovation, but it also has its own political climate, which is not very, you know, easy to accept by many other countries. And its, you know, stability in terms of its sort of international position on a global scale is also questionable. So whilst China is doing fantastic things, you know, look at all your Alibabas and, you know, Tencent and WeChat and so on, I think it's quite often contained to China.
And you talk about the kind of dynamics of China. I mean, every fintech in the UK talks about culture now, and obviously we see the regulator talking a lot more about healthy cultures too. But do you think it's actually possible to build a fintech and scale it like Revolut are scaling it, 40,000% a year, whatever figure that they just put out? Is it possible to do that and have a healthy culture at the same time? Or actually, underlying every kind of shiny fintech, is it more of a dog-eat-dog environment?
I think it's definitely a dog-eat-dog environment. I think that if you have... it's terrible to say that, but you got to sacrifice something, right? And I think in quite a lot of examples, such as Revolut, for example, you're scaling very, very fast. You have the founder who himself works insane hours, who's so committed. You kind of... there is expectation. It all comes down from the top, right? There is expectations that others would work just as much. There are, at the same time, young people who are coming into the workforce that are looking to Revolut, for example, founder, and say, I want to be like him. And for that, I need to work, 24 and a half hours a day and so on and so forth. So it's, it's tough. And competition is tough. Competition for talent is tough. Everybody wants to kind of make their own name. So, and it's like a little bit like a vicious circle,
Lastly, Tanya, are there any fintechs that you're particularly excited about at the moment?
Okay, well, I really like the fintechs that focus on the, and that's my personal sort of opinion, that focus on the freelancers, sole entrepreneurs, and sort of small businesses. I quite like Tide. I think Counting Up is doing great things. Coconut is very interesting. I think I mentioned Yolt before. There are quite a few. I mean, all the challenger banks, such as, Starling and Monzo, they're doing really interesting things, and they're pushing the incumbent banks to be better, to provide a better service. They might not have as many clients, or the big banks might not lose as many clients, but at least they are making the market suddenly awake, and making the big guys who were very complacent and, not really investing in innovation, not investing in the future, now kind of sit up and really take notice and listen.
Thanks for that, Tanya. That's a really cracking guide to all things fintech. Where can our listeners find out more about you or follow you?
Oh, absolutely. So check out our website, www.fintechfutures.com. We also have a Fintech Futures Instagram channel, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. And I do make appearances at various podcasts and also TV shows. So yeah, check it out.
Catch Tanya on all things fintech on all platforms soon enough. But look, Tanya, thank you again for coming in. It is now time for Skittlemania. We've put 30 Skittles in Cup A and given our guest a pair of chopsticks. Over 90 seconds, Tanya will attempt to transfer as many Skittles from Cup A into Cup B whilst answering some of the silliest questions the Smart Money People team can muster. And remember, the record to beat is held by our very own Nate Harwood with 14 Skittles.
And now, get your chopsticks ready. It's Skittle Mania.
And we're off. Tanya, what would you call your pet chimpanzee?
Skittles.
Can milk ever go in the mug before the water?
Yes.
That's the first one down. What is top of your Christmas list?
Alexa. I want Alexa.
In what month does your big winter coat come out?
November.
Oh. Mince pies, yay or nay?
Yay, especially with icing.
We'll have to get some of those in later. What mode of transport do you think you'll use to get to work in 2030?
Autonomous cars.
Autonomous cars. Tanya's doing very well on the school.
Am I fantastic?
Nate is looking very worried. How many times in your life do you think you've sneezed?
Oh, 1,000 times.
We are 47 seconds in.
Oh, man. I am getting there. I'm getting there. Look at that.
What's the best snack to watch a movie with?
A best what?
The best snack to watch a movie with.
Oh, crisps.
Crisps. What type of crisps? What flavour?
Oh, salt and vinegar.
Salt and vinegar. Tasty. What would you cook as your main dish on Come Dine With Me?
Pancakes.
Pancakes with 20 seconds to go. If you were to perform on Stars in Their Eyes, who would you perform as?
Oh man. That's it too. I'll do Diana Ross.
Diana Ross. What a choice. Last question. 5 seconds left. If dogs could talk, what would they tell us?
Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. I love you. Take me for a walk.
And that's all I've got time for. Tanya, I'm going to count your Skittles. It looks like quite a haul.
Okay, do these count?
They don't count. We've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16... 17 Skittles for Tanya from FinTech Futures. That puts Tanya at the top of our leaderboard.
It's Skittle carnage here. Look at that. I am so pleased.
That's amazing, Tanya.
I am
so
pleased.
Well, look, Tanya, thank you.
I feel like
you
I need a trophy and then give a speech. I want to thank my mom and the industry. And shed a tear.
Still a few more weeks to go until Christmas. You might. It's a hard title to beat. Well, look, Tanya, thank you for coming on. It was an absolute delight to hear you talk about fintech. Someone really knowledgeable about the industry that knows it inside out. And of course, we're finally happy to see someone beat Nate Harwood on Skittlemania.
Yes, my greatest achievement.
Well, however much it pains me to admit, that means Tanya has unseated me as the Money Bites Skittlemania champion. She's taken first place on our leaderboard, setting a precedent for chopstick excellence for all future guests. Please go to Twitter to see the top 5 rankings.
Thank you for calling the Tide Loss Stolen Damage Line. You're speaking to Can I help?
Hello. Me and my wife, we've chosen to spend the ensuing months scaling Mount Everest, actually, and we've run into a quandary regarding my business card. The thing is, I'm afraid we don't have our card information because my wife Meredith, she forgot it whilst packing, as well as my socks for that matter. But yes, as I said. But my business card, it's frozen. We've worried we won't be able to use any of the shops or, you know, get our money out. Can I ask why might this be? Do cards often get frozen when people go abroad?
And is it a Tide card that you have, isn't it?
It is, yes. It's a Tide card.
Yeah. Sorry, I do apologise, but the line you've come through to us, Lost, Stolen, Damage. Now we're a third party, so we're external from Tide. Right. We just run the Lost, Stolen, Damage line for them. What I can do is I can provide you with an email address, and if you just send them over some information, they're more than likely going to be able to advise you a lot better than I could.
Okay. No, but the card is damaged. You see, it's frozen. As I said, it's frozen. It's frozen solid. It's enshrouded in a giant frozen cube. It's dripping with icicles. The Nepalese Sherpas, they don't know what to do. I've tried everything. I have my lighter, a blowtorch, a campfire. Nothing's working. Meredith's tried her darndest as well. It's in an entirely frozen
state. Just can't get the card out of the ice.
Yes. I was wondering if you've, you know, helped customers defrost their cards in the past.
Well, defrosting cards isn't really my specialty.
Yeah.
But as I said, I can definitely give you an email address to pop some information over to Tide, and hopefully they might be able to give you some information in regards to that.
Okay, well, yeah, that would be wonderful. I mean, the sooner we can deal with this,
okay.
Yeah. Oh, God, Meredith, I tried to use my tongue and now it's stuck. Oh, God. Meredith! Oh, God, don't use your tongue, Meredith. Bloody nightmare. Hello?
Next up, we spoke to Simon Rabin from Chip, an AI-powered app designed to help consumers with saving, to talk about all things fintech and Chip.
We're speaking with Simon Rabin, the CEO of Chip, a fintech that's growing phenomenally fast today. Simon, thank you for joining us. Can you tell us, what does Chip do?
Chip helps people make things happen with their money. So we're an account that connects to any UK high street bank and enables you to save up automatically for the things that you care about, the things that you want to make happen with your money.
So last week you announced a pretty big investment raise, which included many Chip customers. What's the plan for Chip now?
Well, we're going to continue growing, continuing to help loads of people make things happen with their money. As you mentioned, investment came from our own customer base. We have now over shareholders, vast majority of them are chip savers themselves. And by having an element of crowdfunding, we have customers using the product, but also get to benefit from being shareholders in the business. And they're fantastic advocates for the business as well, telling their friends, telling their family all about CHIP and spreading the word.
And what would you say is the end goal for CHIP? What's the vision, say, in 5 or 10 years' time, or however you think about it?
So one of the biggest problems with savings accounts as they are at the moment is they're just like empty buckets that you're expected to somehow be able to fill up, you know, miraculously. So we want to continue building software and building a product that enables people to save, doing that automatically, bring in rule-based saving, bring in certain incentives to do so, just trying to find ways which are intelligent that slide nicely into people's day-to-day lives that actually help them save. Then the second bit is enabling people to focus the money that they do save towards things that actually matter to them. So that's about making things happen with your money, right? So why am I saving? Is that to make a one-off special purchase? Is that for a rainy day? Is that for later on in life? Is that for a flat deposit? Why am I saving? And enabling people to focus their savings towards the things that actually matter to them, right? And then the third thing is enabling people to earn the best possible returns they can on those savings. For some people, that might be really low risk access to FSCS protected savings accounts. For others, that might be accounts or deposit options that offer a slightly higher return with a bit more risk. And what we want to do is give our customers seamless access to as many different deposit options as we can.
Well, look, today's episode is all about fintechs and the rise of fintech here in the UK. As we kind of sit towards the end of the year, do you have any top predictions around what lies ahead for the UK fintech landscape in 2020?
Yeah, I think that we'll continue to see companies like CHIP, Monzo and Revolut growing exponentially, continue to see companies like CHIP, Monzo and Revolut innovate with our product offerings, making user experiences more and more seamless, more and more magical for the customer. And the customer will come to expect a user experience like they're seeing with CHIP, Monzo, Revolut and others, rather than comparing it to neobanks or traditional banks as they do now.
And with so much competition out there, so many kind of fintechs coming to market, do you think it's harder to kind of really scale a business like CHIP are doing now? Or do you think we're still very much at the start of the kind of the growth of fintech?
When we started this about 2.5 years back, trying to get customers to understand about open banking and getting comfortable connecting their current account was a real challenge. Now that seems to be much easier for us. These types of products, open banking in particular, is much more proliferated. So it's definitely becoming easier to spread the word. We're seeing growth increase because of that. And if you look at the sort of the percentage of the market or the size of the market that companies like ourselves actually dominate, it's still so small compared to the opportunity. So very much this is just the beginning.
Simon, thank you very much for joining us. Where can people find out more about CHIP?
Just go to the App Store or go to Google Play, search CHIP, download the app and start saving.
And that's all we have time for in this week's Money Bites. Please review, subscribe, and why not visit us at Smart Money People. Goodbye.